Labor Radio is with Ernest Kit Krieger. He is the, what exactly are you, Kit?
I'm the currently president of the West Vancouver Teachers Association and was many years ago president of the BCTF.
And you're in charge of the ESL Cuba volunteer program.
That's correct.
What is the ESL Cuba volunteer program?
Well, first, Shane, I'll tell you what preceded it. The BCTF has a very long and proud history as what is called a social justice union and have had many international programs in Central America, Southern Africa, and other places. And 7 years ago, when I was president of the BCTF, I traveled to Cuba and we negotiated a bilateral relationship with the Cuban Teachers Union. Among the projects that grew out of that visit was one that sees two groups of BCTF members, all ESL specialists, travel to Cuba twice a year, two teams in July 2 and December, where we teach ESL methodology to Cuban ESL teachers. Since the collapse of the Soviet Union, the second language in Cuba shifted from Russian to English, and Cuban teachers are anxious to improve their teaching repertoire. It's a tremendously successful program. We've done this for hundreds of teachers in Havana, in Matanzas, Santa Clara, and Pinar del Rio provinces located not far from Havana. But we have this huge resource, retired teachers who have time on their hands and a commitment to international solidarity and teaching. And we're trying to find those teachers and encourage them to go to Cuba for a three-week stint to assist Cuban teachers in ESL instruction in their schools.
So what inspired you to launch this program?
Well, when I went to Cuba for the first time 7 years ago, I was just enthralled with the country. It is a remarkable country culturally, historically, in many other ways. And going there as an educator, I established relations and connections with not only officials in the Cuban Teachers Union, but with Cuban teachers. They toil under incredible hardship imposed substantially by the American embargo or blockade that's been in place since 1961. They don't have any of the material resources that Canadian teachers enjoy, but they have a dedication and a commitment which I had really never seen before. So I went away, like many other BCTF activists, saying, what can BC teachers do to assist Cuban teachers? The record of Cuban education is one of the tremendous successes of the Cuban Revolution. They are essentially a developing country with first world education achievements. They're an island of some 11 million people. There are more than 40 post-secondary institutions and a literacy rate that is in excess of most developed countries.
How long is this program?
Well, we're sending a pilot group of about 15 teachers in March, and they'll have 1 week of orientation where they will meet with representatives of the Cuban Ministry of Education, Cuban Teachers Union, and another sponsoring group in Cuba is MOFAS, which is the Cuban Peace Movement, where they will learn to understand and appreciate the cultural, economic, and political context of Cuban schools. Then for 2 weeks they will be assigned to a Cuban school working with a Cuban colleague, essentially serving as an overqualified teaching assistant, enabling Cuban students to hear native speakers and assisting with small group instruction. Cuban teachers, in terms of their own skills and methodology, are second to none. They really don't need the assistance of Canadian teachers in their teaching, but I think the opportunity to have native speakers and to build some ties between Cuban and Canadian teachers has some great value.
So is this a program to build ties or to educate the students?
Well, it's both. Hearing native language instruction in Cuba is extremely good. It's augmented. The school program is augmented by a national television program. They've got a program that's called University for All, and one of the components is a daily English language program that apparently is among the most popular programs in Cuba. BC teachers assisted Cuban university faculty in developing that program. And so it's assisting an already established program, but certainly there is also great value in Canadian teachers, whether it's in Cuba or other Central American countries or Southern Africa, lending their talents and their dedication to support education in Cuba. Most of the programs that BCTF has done over the years have been union-to-union work, where, for example, BCTF members assisted South African teachers in development of a post-apartheid democratic and multiracial teachers union. and in South America, in Central America, we've worked hard to assist unions to implement technologies and to assist in developing opportunities for women in union leadership positions. But this is the first and only project the BCTF has had over the years, which is focused on teachers-to-teacher contact, and the first time we've actually been in classrooms with alongside Cuban teachers or any teachers in any other country.
Do the Cuban teachers have a labor union?
Yeah, it's a 325,000 member union. My Spanish is terrible, and forgive me, but it's the acronym is SNTECD, which is the Sindicato Nacional de Trabajadores de Educación Científico y Deportivo. Essentially, every educational worker, including every school has a dentist, has a doctor, has a nurse, people who work in facilities or maintenance. Everybody's a member of the union. Even the athletes who play on the national team in sports are also members of the teachers' union. So it's a huge union, one of the largest in the country, and it's that group that we have worked with over the last 7 years through the BCTF.
It seems to be that it's a large union in comparison to the population. Do you know the size of the population of Cuba?
11 million people.
So that's a huge portion.
It's huge. There are, again, because it includes every educational worker, but they've made a major initiative over the last 2 years to reduce class size in primary grades to 20, which would put it way ahead of North American jurisdictions. They have an expansive post-secondary network that include pedagogical institutions in each of the 14 provinces of Cuba and in Havana. They have technical schools. They have schools that are specialized in the arts. They also have a visit schools for special needs students. And they have a model that is quite unique that sees students with, for example, hearing impaired or intellectually, physically challenged students are in classes where the student-teacher ratio is 3 or 4 to 1 in the early years, and then they are integrated by the time they're in intermediate and secondary into schools that have large numbers of non-challenged students. So they really, if you go to Cuba, it is in most respects a developing country. Cubans are very poor, but the priority for the revolution has been both healthcare and education, which results in infant mortality and life expectancy and literacy statistics, which are comparable to Western European and nations in Canada.
Why do you think that Cuba is so poor with that high education level that they have?
Well, a major factor, and I don't pretend to be an expert on these things, but since 1961, the Americans have essentially isolated Cuba politically and economically. And one of the challenges Cuba faces is, unlike every other nation in the world, they may not borrow on the international credit markets. So this is part of the Helms-Burton legislation, which affects not only American relations with Cuba, but those of any other country that wants to do business with the United States. So Cuba is, Canada, I don't know what Canada's national debt is. It's, I think, $600 billion or something in that neighborhood. Well, Cuba cannot run up international credits. They can't borrow. So they're the only country I know that's essentially on a cash and carry basis. That certainly hinders Cuban economic growth. But however, notwithstanding that, there are, and I think another reason is they put their tremendous numbers of resources into social rather than sort of the service part of the economy rather than the other productive part in both health and education. That's the priority for the Cuban Revolution. And I think those are major factors. The blockading makes Cuba, for the most part, have to buy oil at the highest prices that they don't have, although developing their own independent supply of energy. And in fact, a lot of criticism now of Venezuela because President Chavez of Venezuela, much to the consternation of the U.S., has embarked in a program where they trade oil to Cuba in exchange for medical services. Cuba trains doctors from all over the Latin America, developing country, and then at no cost to those governments sends those people back to be doctors in their countries, and Cuba sends doctors to many other nations and other medical personnel to other nations in the in Latin America. So I think those things probably aren't very good for the economy, but they serve Cuba and its neighbors well.
It seems to me, from my limited economic knowledge, that if you don't have the WTO and the IMF in your country trying to privatize everything, you may be in a better position when the embargo is lifted. Do you think that might be the case with Cuba?
Well, I'm a history teacher, a social studies teacher, not an economist, but I think the isolation that has been imposed upon Cuba by the American blockade has had resulted in many hardships for the Cuban people, but also has resulted in benefits. They don't have the same strictures that the WTO and the World Bank have in terms of forcing debt-ridden nations to downsize social services and impose hardships on the most unfortunate people in the society. It's all created a tremendous amount of solidarity. I don't want to portray Cuba as a nation where everybody is happy to live as they do, because life is very difficult in Cuba. But they're all determined to maintain their independence and are willing to endure hardships that I don't think Canadians would endure in order to maintain that independence. They're not ready for any material gain to give that up.
Have you been to any other Latin American countries?
I've been to Mexico, again, on union business. Several years ago, the elementary teachers of Mexico were under siege by the national government. The National Teachers Union is really a company union run by government, and they were in rebellion, and I went down there to show some support for the elementary teachers of Mexico City. But I haven't traveled extensively in Latin America other than that.
Okay. I want to go back to your ESL program, and I want to ask you, who gets to go to Cuba as a volunteer? Is it only teachers?
Well, yeah. I would say teachers or anyone who has made some progress toward a teaching certificate. We're focusing on retired teachers, but any teacher who has a recently current credential, who is on a leave of absence or and has the time and can go to Cuba during the school year would be welcome to apply. But a non-teacher, the Cuban teachers are very highly qualified, and we're really aiming at providing them support from BC-certified teachers rather than simply people who wish to travel to Cuba to meet Cubans and assist them in their education. It's the assistance we provide needs to be at a pretty skilled level given how skilled Cuban teachers are.
So who pays for them?
Well, Cuba is unable to afford, obviously, to host Canadians. We are the have nation, Cuba is not. So the cost of this, and it's being sponsored by, BCTF endorses this project, and the Cuban government, both Ministry of Education and the Cuban Teachers Union and the peace movement support this. And so it's being organized by a nonprofit agency in Vancouver called Cuba Education Tours. So the cost is airfare, which is sort of a movable feast depending upon the season. And then for 3 weeks, it's $1,070 Cuban convertible pesos, which is equivalent of one U.S. dollar. So for $1,070 plus airfare, a three-week program that includes accommodation, I think breakfasts are included, the orientation program, some cultural events, and then I think it's for $390 U.S. We will, upon request, arrange a week at the beaches for people to have some R&R at Cuban resorts after the time is over. So it's essentially provided to the participants at the cost that the Cubans will have in putting our colleagues up in the program.
So the volunteers pay for this?
That's right. Now, it'd be nice if this is a fairly new project. I was in Cuba in March of last year and met with a man named Orlando Fondora, who is the head of the Cuban peace movement. We were looking for opportunities to increase the ties between Cuba and Cuban teachers and Canadian teachers, and we would hope over time we may be able to find some sponsorship. But at the initial stages, this is sort of user pay.
What if a student who graduated from SFU wanted to go?
Would they
be able to, like, say, fund it through sponsorship if they could find
some
sponsorship?
Yeah, if they can find someone to assist them, be tremendous. But we don't have, at the present, any kind of sponsorship to subsidize or underwrite people's participation. But if there are people who have gone through the education program, even partially, and they wish to go down and contribute, that's great. And I'm hoping over time to even to see whether University of British Columbia could allow BC education students to get credit for their practicum in Cuban schools, but we're not quite there yet.
Okay, and how do you screen candidates to go?
Well, Well, if they have a valid BC teaching certificate, and we have, through Cuban Education Tours, we will communicate with each of the prospective participants and talk to them and make sure they understand it. So it's really a working, it's an 8-hour day, work day. It's, you can do some tourism if you wish after, but really for 3 weeks, it's an intensive program, first of orientation, then of work along Cuban schools. But we assume that the people who apply will be people who have, both a qualification and a commitment to, contribute to. We found a tremendously positive initial response by teachers who, mostly again retired, who have lots of talent, lots of energy left, and have been looking for these kind of opportunities. Many are people who have gone to Cuba before, not obviously to teach, and are looking for an opportunity to gain greater insights into Cuban education and the Cuban system.
Okay, and of course you would screen them for criminal records and that sort of thing.
Well, everyone who holds a valid BC teaching certificate and taught in the public school has gone through a criminal record check. So that's already been done by virtue of something called the Criminal Record Review Act.
Okay. And when they get there, what exactly do they teach?
Well, it's much like being English in Cuba, it's much like the French or Spanish programs in BC. So beginning in the intermediate, but largely the secondary years, Cuban students go to classes to learn English. There's a curriculum, again, was developed in part with the assistance of BC teachers. And so they will be alongside Cuban teachers who will have control of the curriculum and will assist them in delivering that curriculum. But it's much like being an FSL student, a French as a second language student in BC. They have 3 or 4 hours a week where they learn English, again, augmented by this national television program called University for All.
And when they teach us, do they have to speak Spanish at all? Or
no, you don't have to be a Spanish-speaking teacher. You don't have to be an ESL specialist. You just need to, because the language of instruction in the classrooms is English. But clearly people who speak Spanish have a little, and I don't. I wish I did. I speak what's called domino Spanish, which means I can play dominoes, and that's about it with my Cuban friends. It's an environment that is in large part because the Cubans are very, very friendly, and on the staff there will be native English speakers. There should be no problem with anyone who's not a Spanish speaker.
So given the cost to go there and the airfare and the $1,000 a week, what are the benefits to the volunteers?
The experience. To be able, first of all, many people simply want to make a contribution. Canadian teachers, by and large, are extremely aware, notwithstanding the challenges we face in our public school system, that compared to teachers in many other nations of the world, we are privileged in terms of the conditions in which we teach. And when we find colleagues, whether it's in South Africa or Namibia, where we have projects, or in Latin America or in Africa, we are happy to help out. This is a program the BCTF has been involved in for nearly 40 years. So that's number one. You obviously have a travel experience, the ability to get an insight and contact with the Cuban system, which is very different. As you know, Cuba, along with North Korea, are really the last two communist countries in the world. So it's a chance to see a system that is very centralized and very much integrated into a political philosophy compared to many other systems in the world. And we will be the first teachers in the world who have ever had the opportunity to work alongside Cuban teachers in Cuban classrooms. So that's the certainly, I think, a tremendous draw. And by the initial response, I think a lot of teachers see this unique response, a unique opportunity.
That's great. And you have a website available.
That's right. And anyone interested can log into www.hellocuba.ca. Hello Cuba is all one word. And then they'll see the word educators. They click on that and then click on retired teachers, and there's an application form. As I said, our pilot project will leave on March the 13th. We still have a couple of spaces on that tour. And then we're hoping to begin a regular monthly group of teachers, and we're doing this along with teachers in Ontario as well, and they'll go monthly beginning in October is our plan at the moment.
So is the ESL Cuba Volunteer Program now an incorporated nonprofit society?
No, it's not a nonprofit society, but it's being organized by an existing nonprofit called the Cuban Education Tours, and of course the agencies in Cuba that are co-sponsoring it are, I guess they're nonprofit, they're all government agencies, and the BCTF, of course, is the professional organization representing the 43,000 teachers of British Columbia.
Great. Thanks, Kit. It's been great talking to you.
I appreciate it, Shane, and appreciate getting word out, and hopefully there'll be some SFU teacher education students who may want to be able to participate.
That'd be great, and we do broadcast out throughout the Lower Mainland, so
perfect.
Maybe some other teachers out there who don't know about the program will hear about it and get in touch with you. Do you have a number or anything that
they
can reach?
Well, the website's the best way, but if they want to talk to me directly, they can call me at 619-4878.
All right. We've been talking to Kit Krieger. He is the champion for the ESL Cuba Volunteer Program. You're listening to Labor Radio on CJSF FM 90.1.